Hello and welcome to The Hearing. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's album, which is from 2012, Love This Giant by David Byrne and St. Vincent. This is kind of the culmination of a trilogy of sorts. Last week was David Byrne's most recent album. Before that, we had a St. Vincent album. Now, of course. Oh, real quick before we get to it, quick correction on last week clear up, I guess you could say. My words aren't working tonight. You had wondered if Eno had played the solo on Everybody's Coming to My House.
Yes.
It was, and I watched the beginning as when I posted the episode, the credit was robot rhythm guitar.
Yeah.
He played rhythm guitar, not lead. Solo would be lead guitar.
Oh, you're right.
Rhythm guitar is chords and riffs and all the repeating rhythmic stuff. So, yeah, it was one of those rhythm parts. Anyway, now on to Love This Giant by David Byrne and St. Vincent. Love This Giant is a studio album made in collaboration between David Byrne and Annie Clark, a.k.a. St. Vincent, released on 4AD and Todo Mundo on September 10th, 2012. Was that when we found it? When we were talking about it?
Because
this is how you told me about this album.
Yeah.
About years ago, and that's how I found out about St. Vincent.
The cool thing about Spotify is when you add something to a playlist, and of course originally it was when you starred something, and now I just call that playlist the starred list.
Right.
They changed it to a regular list. It actually has the date that it was added to that list.
Oh, okay.
So I've got like Ice Age on September 27th, 2012.
Spotify goes back that far?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think we had Spotify back in 2012. Because I couldn't remember where I first heard this album. Let me finish the intro first.
Okay.
Released on September 10th, 2012, in the UK, and a day later in the US, Byrne and Clark began working together in late 2009, like right after her second album, apparently.
The one after we reviewed, actually, last week.
2009, I think, or was after.
Yeah.
Just after. Using a process of writing and promotion that Byrne had previously used on his 2008 collaboration with Brian Eno called Everything That Happens Will Happen Today. Although just about everything he's done has been a collaboration with Eno.
He's worked with Eno a lot, yeah.
The duo had previously played together live at a St. Vincent show and on the album Here Lies Love, which was a rock opera about Imelda Marcos. I need to look into that.
That's on Spotify.
I noticed that. I got to look into it. The performers enlisted a variety of brass musicians to augment their songwriting and toured over the following year to promote the album. They had met in 2009 at a Radio City Music Hall benefit concert, and they started working together after a second meeting at a New York City thrift shop called Housing Works, where Bjork and Dirty Projectors were performing. So she is a Bjork fan.
Yeah.
Credence to my theory of last week. concert organizers suggested a similar collaboration. Their work was initially slated to be just a single live performance, but Clark suggested adding brass to their lineup and, doing an album.
I should have known that it was her that added the brass.
Musicians composed lyrics in person via email, which resulted in an entire album's worth of material. They each wrote their own lyrics, with the exception of The Forest Awakens, in which Byrne wrote and Clark sings. The instrumentation and funky grooves discouraged Byrne from writing his typical personal lyrics. There are some very David Byrne lyrics on the album.
Of course. Oh, yes.
and caused him to write about larger themes.
Or songs about food and government.
Exactly. Clark emphasized the art music nature of the recordings and composing. While composing. The album cover was inspired by Beauty and the Beast, with Byrne as Buzz Lightyear and Clark as a grotesque beast. You know, he's got the chin implant rocking.
Well, yeah, I always wondered about that. Why does she look so weird?
She was the beast, he was Beauty. The duo originally planned a plastic Beauty and a feral beast as a joke about the age difference. There's a 30-year difference between them.
Right.
Before they met the prosthetics artist Gabe Bartolos. Love This Giant was produced by Byrne, Clark, Patrick Dillett, and John Congleton, Annie Clark's usual producer, and features Byrne and Clark on guitar, vocals, and various other instruments, and a list of additional musicians that is way too long for me to list to read out here. Go to Wikipedia. There's a ton of musicians on this album, mostly playing brass, a couple percussionists, a bass player, but mostly brass.
Almost a new polyphonic spree with Dave.
Yeah, except instead of all singers, it's all brass players.
Right, right. I usually just refer to it as a marching band because it's at that point you are just about at that. It's
basically level. Dixieland, yeah. Just a reminder onto the tracks that I don't edit any music into the show for copyright reasons, but down in the description you'll find links to the album on Spotify and YouTube.
Yeah, the album cover I always thought of a sort of a play on the American Gothic painting.
Oh, yeah, it looks a little bit like that, yeah.
Just, I mean,
because almost, of the way they're dressed, yeah.
Yeah, just a very modern Gothic take on the Gothic.
On to track one, Who. This is the only song I really remembered before listening to it for this review. This one stuck in my head for 6 years for some reason.
Oh.
I love the opening with the horns and how syncopated they are once the drums come in.
Well, right. I was like, oh, like David Byrne's collaborating with somebody. I haven't heard this before. You know, I don't think I had any knowledge of St. Vincent before this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I found it on Spotify. I'm like, oh, let's give this a listen. And I'm like, wait, what the fuck is this?
And the acoustic guitar comes in and it's just on the upbeats.
Right. Then all of a sudden it's, you know, you get this that guitar and you're like, whoa, that's Talking Heads David Byrne. You know, like, wait a minute. We're going to combine like a marching band with the Talking Heads? What the? This is going to be interesting.
The only things on the downbeat are Byrne's vocal, the kick, and the snare. Everything else is syncopated.
So, yeah, I've been hooked ever since.
I wish I had really taken a deep dive and listened to a full St. Vincent album at this point, because, you know, two weeks ago I went off on her about how much I enjoy her music. I've bought all five, by the way.
Oh, cool.
And I love Annie Clark's ethereal vocal on the chorus.
Well, right. Normally you don't hear David Byrne harmonizing with someone else.
Right. No.
Usually it's David Byrne harmonizing with himself.
Yeah.
You know, all the Talking Heads, you know, the live stuff, you got to hear it. Like, when you heard that, with the background singers. But yeah, just hearing it on this with her.
And they harmonized beautifully. Their voices work perfectly together.
Amazing voices. Oh, by the way, I'm seeing David Byrne for the first time live Saturday night. So, this trilogy is really weird because it's like, what, 4 months after I saw, or 5 months after I saw her live, and now a couple nights from now I'll be seeing him live.
Saturday's going to be great for both of us. If you don't know what I'm talking about for myself, go watch the last video on this channel, or go back to watch the first episode of The Reckless, I should say. It's two videos ago. They harmonize beautifully. And just the vocal Annie Clark does on the chorus, it's just almost an angel coming through this weird... Yes. David Byrne thing with horns. And I wonder if she recorded that multiple times or if they just used that one take and repeated it, because that's really all she sings up on her own in this song, the line, "Who is an honest man?"
Right.
And the lead guitar has to be Annie Clark.
Yes.
Because it is just loud and angry and just stabs through the song.
Right. And of course, I didn't recognize that at the time. It was kind of like, wow, you know, this is like a cool sound David Byrne's, you know, working on, you know, just thinking it was him.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when you hear her solo stuff, you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's her guitar.
That's her.
And I think Byrne takes a couple of solos later in the album, though, because there's a couple of spots where it doesn't really sound like her. I love the kind of soft bridge, because it's a complete departure from, you know, the verses.
Yeah.
They get very acoustic on the bridge. And it just kind of ends suddenly.
That's the David Byrne thing. He loves emptying the song. Just like,
wait, you songs in this album to do that.
Don't leave me standing here. I can't get used to this lifestyle. Exactly.
It's very much like that.
Just like, wait, what? Yeah, he does. He just likes leaving you back there, just kind of to contemplate what the hell you just heard.
On to track two, Weakened in the Dust. Speaking of contemplating what you just heard. I have this one in my notes described as Dixieland disco.
I mean, because this is
Dixieland horns with Annie Clark doing effectively a disco vocal.
It's a very St. Vincent song.
Yeah.
And she hadn't used this before, like, you know, now, you know, I'm saying with the knowledge of her catalog,
right.
She hadn't used this sound before or since until Mass Seduction. Which, how fried was I that I spelled mass Miseducation? Never mind.
First time I ever saw that title, I thought it was Mass Education.
Some people say Ass Seduction. I don't know.
Yeah, we won't comment on the cover art. Again, more obviously Andy Clark lead guitar work. It just stabs through the track.
Yeah.
And I love how her voice kind of, you know, plays in and out with the horns rhythmically. Yeah, the rhythmic sense on this album is amazing. Probably more Andy Clark than David Byrne, because he just kind of lays into some African rhythms and goes
right. With it. The sense of play between so many, like their vocals, between the sounds, it's just it's really, I mean, if spoiler alert, why you would like this album so much.
And there's a point later on in the song where the horns are kind of interplaying with her voice. And in between the vocal parts, they go a bit Zappa. They hit some really interesting chords that remind me a lot of Frank Zappa.
I could see that, definitely.
And there are two guitar solos on. Both kind of follow the vocal melody. The first one's definitely Annie Clark. I have just Annie in my notes just to simplify matters.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try to remember her user last name. Because we're not on a first-name basis. but the second time that solo comes in, it sounds very different. It's not St. Vincent's Annie Clark's guitar sound, because her guitar sound is very aggressive.
Yeah.
Much mellower sound, playing the same part.
So it's probably Byrne.
I'm wondering if that's David Byrne, because his guitar sound is often a little mellower.
Yeah.
And he's more of a rhythm guitarist. I don't know. He's rarely taken a solo. If you go back to Talking Heads, I can really only think of one song that has a solo on it. And it could have been Jerry Harrison, but you know.
Didn't like Adrian Belew?
He played with them at points, yeah.
Yeah. Like that Take Me to the River that, you know, he's kind of doing that Robert Fripp light kind of thing going on. Exactly.
but David Byrne is a criminally underrated rhythm guitarist. He's a brilliant rhythm guitarist. So that solo could easily be him. And things I know he played, he had kind of a mellower, softer sound. So I think that second solo could be him. I'd love to know for sure. On to track 3, Dinner for Two. This is classic David Byrne.
Yes. A lot of songs about, you know, domestic bliss or lack thereof.
yeah. And it starts with these really slow horns that are almost classical sounding.
Yes.
Very mellow. And then these amazingly David Byrne lyrics about a dinner party come in.
It's kind of like a Sgt. Pepper, like, horn sound, you know, at the beginning almost. Kind of. You know?
Everybody had their mutes in.
Yeah.
And there's this really subtle flute just adding these rhythmic little stabs. Just playing this almost a drum beat on a flute. And the horns are really interesting, like, in the background, as opposed to the last few songs.
And of course, you even get your abrupt David Byrne ending in this, too, of course, where you're just like, wait, what?
And the horn solo riff is so 80s.
Yeah.
It sounds like an 80s pop horn, synth horn riff.
It is weird that he likes to revisit that still.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I talked about that on his album. There were some real very 80s bits.
Like, before we started recording, we talked about Hackett and how he was like, I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah. With Genesis.
To only like relive it for like the last 20 years, pretty much. He's been re-recording stuff from the 70s. Right. Well, Byrne, I'm not doing this Talking Heads thing anymore. I'm out of here. And yet here he is still revisiting the 80s.
So. Except he's not really doing stuff the Talking Heads did. I mean, it's going to sound a little Talking Heads because he wrote most of Talking Heads.
True.
So it's that has his style to it. But there's stuff he's done on this album and on American Utopia that is very pop 80s, very synth pop
80s.
Which was not what he was doing in the 80s. So it's weird that he's trying to bring that into his sound suddenly.
Yeah, you're right. Because, he was on the outside of all of that, really.
Yeah, they were not a pop band at all. I mean, they dabbled.
They were doing African rhythms, which were, of course, popularized by other white artists, too.
Trace that back to Stuart Copeland in rock, anyway.
Yeah.
Lately, Byrne's been trading in, like, 80s pop sounds.
Yeah.
Weirdly. But there's a great, back to Dinner for Two, great syncopated riff on the chorus. Again, more syncopation. Love that on this album. On to track 4, Ice Age. This one was written by Annie Clark. It's not a collaborative.
At least not writing. This is where I truly became a St. Vincent fan listening to this.
I should have. Yeah, yeah. This is definitely a St. Vincent song.
At the time, you know, I wasn't sure how much, you know, David Byrne was behind this sound and, you know, how she really fit into it. I know, she really, you know, worked well into this sound, you know, if not augmented it more.
Yeah.
But what's not to love about her voice in this, yeah, you know? Yeah. We let that, like, when your winter thaws line is just like, doesn't get better than that? I don't think it does.
And as I was saying last week, I was saying David Byrne needs to be leashed. I'm softening that a bit. He needs to be filtered. Because I was looking at the writing credits for the Talking Heads, and the other members of the band did write a lot of music. He wrote, obviously, all the lyrics. Yeah. They did write a lot of the music. And, you know, they kind of filtered him. In this case, Annie Clark is filtering him. And he's much better when he's sort of filtered through another artist or, you know, other musicians. Love how the horns in this kind of have an electronic sound.
I think kind of disco-y towards the end there.
Yeah, the love the horn riff at the end with the synth bass.
Oh, yeah.
But the kind of affected horns on this are really... this was after Actor. So this was kind of leaning into what she did with Marrow and, you know, what she's eventually going to do with Mass Seduction.
Yeah.
Or no, it wasn't Mass Seduction. It was on...
Self-titled.
It was Digital Witness.
Yes. Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what
you did. You know, we kind of lean into that with this. In fact, she had said, I don't know if I mentioned this in my intro, that she did this project because she wanted to start working with horns.
Oh, really?
The reason she pushed horns is because she'd never worked with horns. Apparently, those aren't horns on Marrow. It's keyboards and guitar. She wanted to play with horns a little bit.
That's the thing with synthesizers, yeah. You know, these days, they can mimic whatever you want, you know.
I saw a live version of Digital Witness. That horn part is a keyboard.
Yeah.
Or at least it is live. But she said, you know, she was interested in this project. The thing she was interested in with this project is working with horns because she'd never done it before. On to track 5, another screamingly David Byrne song.
He doesn't have the bluntness on American Utopia, but he's working towards it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the horns kind of sound backwards at the beginning of this song.
It's they kind of do a little Glenn Miller sort of thing. Actually, the intro I thought sounded a little bit like Musical Youth.
I only know the one song, and I'm not hearing a similarity.
There was a little bit of that island kind of thing to it, and then it turns to like this Glenn Miller full thing, and you're like, wait, what? It's
very kind of big band sounding, and there's this nice kind of skittery percussion sound that's only on the left in the chorus.
Right. The drums are kind of unexpected.
And it goes a little hip-hop during the instrumental break.
Right. Suddenly, they brought this funk to Glenn Miller, and you're just like, wait, what? What's he doing?
And again, a sudden ending.
once you've noticed it, you can't unnotice it.
On to track 6, The Forest Awakes, written by David Byrne, Annie Clark, and Walt Whitman. I'm not versed enough in his work to know what was quoted.
I mean, I was already sold when I first listened to this, and then it got to this, and I was just, wow.
I love how the horns mix with the electronic sounds.
Yes.
And how they kind of syncopate with the vocals and either a tuba or a synth bass. I don't know what it is. And it just gets more complex as the song goes. And David Byrne has these kind of James Brown-esque utterances.
Yes, I love when David Byrne goes James Brown. So you have like all the elements that I just absolutely love combined into one song.
And it just adds this perfect amount of weird. Because as I mentioned in the intro, it's an Annie Clark vocal. And so you just have her angelic voice.
And then his
exactly. And this just increasingly syncopated horn parts and this amazing rhythmic complexity. And some of the horns have a bit of a psycho feel.
Yeah.
They just get a little insane and maddening. And I think this is another guitar solo that I think might be David Byrne because it doesn't quite have Annie Clark sound. It's just, yeah, this is where it really kind of, halfway mark is where it kind of gets, we get really get into what this is.
Yes.
On to track 7, I Should Watch TV.
I always saw this one as the single, because, I mean, it's kind of the title track, really.
Yeah, well, this is the one that has the title of the album in it. Behold, right. The Love Giant is the line.
Yeah.
And again, can't get more burned than that title.
Right.
I Should Watch TV. And it's just Byrne singing over this affected sample of his own voice.
It's a lot more electronic than the other tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the brass you kind of have playing like a lead, but the bass is all electronic.
Yeah, everything is electronic, including the samples that are affected, but it's clearly Byrne's voice just kind of scatting, creating a rhythm. Similar to what Flobots did much later. Actually, not earlier than this, on one track.
I was going to say, this is 12, man.
Later than the Flobots album we reviewed. But yeah, similar idea where it was just a vocal laying down a rhythm. Love the horns when they come in with the drums. And the high horns get, again, kind of maddening, but in a good way.
And you understand it with this, because, I mean, he's posing a legit question. Right? I mean, do we really need to understand or have knowledge of what passes for pop culture, or can we just exist?
This is the interesting thing about the song. This one, again, one of my few comments on the lyrics, because I can't tell if he's parodying television or being nostalgic about it.
He was trying to watch television to understand how other people think and feel, trying to get a better idea. And the more he watched it, I mean, you know, he's trying, but do we really need to do that?
But he also kind of feels very nostalgic about TV in this one.
Yeah.
Which is, it's this weird juxtaposition of questioning it and kind of parodying it, but also having this warmth and nostalgia for it, which is something I, particularly when the subject is TV, that only Byrne could do.
Right.
On to track 8, Lazarus. This is the Annie Clark section of the album, I think. Because and the next one are very, very Annie Clark.
I mean, this is like kind of an
duets. The next two is what I meant. This one is just a perfect melding of the two, of their two styles. And it starts with this beautiful fanfare that mixes with this electronic percussion. And it is. It's this great mix of both of their styles.
The one thing that hit my mind when I was listening to this critically, you know, for the first time in years, this is kind of, I think it's a companion piece to the final Talking Heads song, Cool Water.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the song.
It's Cool Water is sort of, it's about, you know, it's from the perspective of the workers.
Okay.
And they're you know, just wasting away and you know, intensive labor and just literally it's killing them. And this feels like it's from the perspective of some sort of deity coming back to, you know, seek vengeance on the people who are inflicting this. Right. Yeah, because even it's a great Talking Heads song. It was the last song on Naked. Check it
out after we're done.
Yeah. But of course, then they use that cool water as kind of like a refrain in this.
Yeah, it probably is a reference. Because Byrne wrote his own lyrics, so, you know.
And cool water, they only say at the very end of it, you know, where they finally get to drink.
Right.
and then drown in it.
Yeah. And on the break, the horns do something really interesting on this song. Because it sounds like palm muting on a guitar. Like you get in metal where, you know, it's a very short staccato thick sound.
Right.
But the horns are doing it. And it's a fascinating
sound. It is.
It's the most metal thing I've ever heard. And then we finish that, and then guitars replace the horns. You have guitars playing the same part that the horns played in the first few verses.
They really had a lot of fun with this. Yeah. Like I said, this is like, what, the second song I liked off the album.
This is one of my favorites on the album.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's easily great. I mean, it's a great one.
On to track 9. Now we get into the Annie Clark section. Optimist, very St. Vincent.
Yes.
Starts with this nice kind of classical-ish beginning. And the horns come in very subtly.
Very early St. Vincent.
Yeah.
It almost feels like this would be at home on, like, Marry Me.
Yeah.
Or, I guess, Actor or Strange Mercy.
Yeah. Love the horn break after verse one. It's just the horns are kind of interspersed between the vocals in this one instead of being out in front like on other songs. Mm-hmm. And the ending is, it is sort of a classical pop thing, the way it fades out.
Yeah.
Kind of mixing of classical and pop that kind of fades into rock, weirdly. it's this weird melding of pop classical into rock on the fade out. It's beautiful.
This would probably get my pick as the weakest off the album. It kind of gets lost with all the other.
It's a little bit of a
album stuff that's going on. Yeah.
I probably because I just recently discovered St. Vincent. I've been falling in love with her music. That you know, it really stuck out to me because it is very St. Vincent. As is track 10, Lightning. Again, this is the Andy Clark section.
Yeah.
Nice sampled groove with the horns. More kind of rattly percussion. I'm a percussion geek, so I always got to comment on that. And the horns are really nicely adapted in the chorus because it's a very sort of typical rock chorus.
Yeah.
Kind of almost like hard rock, very, again, kind of 80s. The horns are nicely fit in very nicely there. And the ending is almost deconstructed.
Huh.
Because the horn parts are kind of separated a little bit.
Oh.
And the rhythm is kind of taken apart a little bit at the end. I don't know if deconstructed is the right word, but it kind of almost sounds that way. Anything else?
No.
On to track 10. Or sorry, track 11. The One Who Broke Your Heart. Now we go back to David Byrne.
You could almost call this one like one of the best Talking Heads songs recorded by the Talking Heads.
This is where it gets really big band. It's that sort of exotic kind of Latin big band sound mixed with electronics. And then you get these great guitar stabs cutting through it. And the chorus goes completely like, I don't know if it's salsa or mambo. It's one of those styles.
Right.
Big band sound. It's that again with electronics. It's so Byrne.
It's David Byrne being David Byrne, you know.
Yeah.
And like that's the beauty of this album. The two of them just, I mean,
indulging.
Yeah.
Indulging, but also kind of filtering each other.
Yeah. Because
we don't get the full Byrne, thankfully, but we also don't get the full Annie Clark. So they kind of they complement each other beautifully, but they also are perfect foils for each other.
Right.
It's this great combination. And you know, back to The One Who Broke Your Heart, the horns just get more complex as the song goes.
Yeah.
And I was actually, this one, I actually kind of found myself jumping back and forth through the song to see how the horns progress. And to kind of track them to see how different they sound in parts where they're effectively repeating, but they sound a little bit different. On to track 12, the closer, Outside Space and Time, another one written by David Byrne.
Just probably a really the only nice ballad
by Byrne. It's a really nice mellow ending.
Yeah. Yeah,
nice
it's probably, yeah, I mean, one of his best ballads too, I would say. Yeah. I mean, and the, you know, especially with those harmonies.
Yeah. And just a nice again mix of percussion and electronics. There's a high part that comes in. I think it's guitar, but it sounds very electronic.
You never know with St. Vincent.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why I'm giving the benefit of that and saying it's probably guitar because she loves her effects.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of this, it just kind of puts a chill up your spine and on this nice mellow ballad. And the horn break at the end was just a beautiful surprise because it just goes off in a different direction.
Yeah.
From the rest of the song.
Kind of that Salvation Army sound at the end.
It's this nice, beautiful, soft ending.
Yeah.
And these two need to work together again.
Right.
Like I said, they complement each other perfectly, but they also foil each other perfectly. Because Byrne tends to go a little too weird, as I talked about in depth last time. And Annie Clark tends to get a little too mainstream at times.
Yeah.
She goes a little too typical pop. She
more kind of so now than the last album or two.
I'm kind of reassessing Mass Seduction after reading the production credits.
Yeah.
We'll talk off air. But I think, you know, his extra weirdness and her leaning a little too mainstream kind of balance each other perfectly. It's like they're both leaning over the different sides of the tightrope and holding, you know, grasping each other's hands. And it just works perfectly. Obviously, I think we both recommend it.
Yeah.
This album is a masterpiece that sounds like nothing else before it or since.
So yeah, I've had Ice Age, Lazarus, The One Who Broke Your Heart, I Am an Ape, and The Forest Awakes as my start from this.
My favorite, maybe it's Lazarus, Optimist, Lightning, Nanny Clark songs, and of course Who, because that's the one that really stuck with me on this song.
Yeah,
and that's the song that really kind of is my emblematic song for the album, and that brilliant horn riff that kicks it off. Anyway, that's it for Love This Giant. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like and subscribe if you haven't. Until, well, we'll see what we're doing, because next week's getting interesting. You're busy, so
yeah,
there's definitely not going to be a hearing next week. You know that. We were going to bank some shows for the TV show, for our Serial Experiments Lane viewing. We'll see where that goes.
Right.
Just say until maybe two more weeks from now. Next time we'll be reviewing Dromomania by New York Gypsy All-Stars. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.